The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today on Quick Slants the Podcast, Super Bowl 51, cleaning up the confetti edition. It's the nose guy and the senator bringing you home, telling you the stuff that nobody's told you yet, because we cover the damn team and they don't.
Coming up today on Quick Slants the Podcast. Philly.
Tom.
We are pretty gassed. It is Tuesday afternoon, the Patriots parade in the books. We covered the crap out of that thing from the friendly confines here in Burlington. Can't say I am displeased about that. But we have so much to get to and through, because in the aftermath of the Patriots' fifth Super Bowl win, a win for the ages. There's a number of things that I know that Phil and I will be able to give further context, texture, and backfill to that you're not getting from the people who just parachute in, chew on the carrion, feast on the roadkill of the Patriots' victory, and then fly away. Isn't that right, Phil?
I'm sensing...
Because we cover the team!
A little bit of anger.
No, I'm not angry.
No, I know.
It's just, I think people do a great job no matter where you are from. There's talented writers across the country. There's smart analysis done by a lot of people. But there's an ownership
sure.
You have.
Of course there is.
I feel an ownership
of course there
to the
is.
Beat.
Not many of us with the team just about every single freaking day from training camp through the Super Bowl. So it gives us a unique perspective, I feel.
First perspective I want to give, and I'm going to tell you exactly what we're going to hit. Phil and I are going to hit the comeback, tell you things about it you might not necessarily know right now. Conditioning. We saw it as a factor. Why were we able to tell you that it would be a factor?
Why?
Why did we know it was going to be a factor? I'm going to talk about big plays within the game, and there's a few of them that on further review, you'll learn a little something or else other. I'm a little tired still. Best Super Bowl. Why this one was great, why it wasn't the greatest, or why it was. And Tom Brady's hero's journey. Actually, we talked about this in September, October, and it actually came fully to fruition. So I want to revisit that. And Phil's also going to have his finger up to gesture to me that he wanted to say something.
Well, we're going to have a lot of things that come full circle, like the hero's journey did, like the hills out at the training camp, practice fields did. But before we really get into these things, Tom, I have to encourage people to just smash the shit out of that subscribe button on iTunes.
No doubt.
We need you to subscribe. We are going to continue to post Quick Slants the Podcast episodes throughout the off season. So not only will we be bringing you a tremendous episode retracing, I'm having trouble speaking today as well, everything that happened in the Super Bowl. We're eventually going to be talking draft. We're going to be talking free agency. We're going to have you covered from all those angles. And all of those episodes will be brought to you by Papa Gino's. Because Papa Gino's is the official pizza of Quick Slants, the podcast, and the New England Patriots. You might have heard of them. It's made with dough that is freshly made in Walpole, Mass. Mm-hmm. Every day from just five simple ingredients. And nothing else tastes like Papa Gino's. It's just the facts we've been telling you all year, but I will continue to tell you until Papa Gino's is almost forced to go out of business because there has just been a run on that fresh-made dough from people just attacking their stores.
Quick observation last week. Folks on Twitter, or one fellow on Twitter, hit us up and said that he actually broke down and had a Papa Gino's pizza because we had ballyhooed it so greatly. And then the Puppuccino.
I got to stop you there. This is how tired you are. We actually gave that guy a shout out last week.
I know,
week.
But this is what's funny is we had the public talk back with this guy. He's like an engineer or something. His brain's massive. And Puppuccino's, who we added, ATTED, liked it. They might have retweeted it, but they don't follow us, and they're not verified.
Whoa.
So Puppuccino's social media folk, get yourself verified. Start following Quick Slants, the podcast. Look, this is quid pro quo, hand in glove stuff that I'm talking about right now. I want to partner with you. You want to partner with us.
Yep.
It's a sponsorship, but we want to be able to believe in the product.
Well, we do.
We want to be able to believe in the social media product. We can't row the damn boat all the way upstream by ourselves, Papa.
Can't throw the ball and catch
Can't throw the ball and catch the ball. So let's get after it. Why is this comeback not as unique as everyone says? Phil, I've seen the statistics, haven't you?
I have. It's
such as 538 numbers?
Yeah, I mean, and we can get into those if you want. I feel like, do those have you a little hot? And I believe it. I understand if they did. I could understand why. So the numbers we're referencing, 538, an ESPN entity, I believe had the Patriots' odds of winning midway through the third quarter. It was, I believe it was even after they scored their first touchdown. Their odds of winning actually decreased because it took them so long to score.
Right.
It was less than 1%.
And it went even further down when they settled for a field goal. And here's the niggling detail that you can't have shared with you when we talk about win probability. And 538 doesn't just chart this and speak about it. Pro Football Reference also, which is, if you don't follow Pro Football Reference or use them as a resource for pro football, you're missing the boat. They have more voluminous stats than anybody, and that includes Comcast. The win probability measure is a nice catch-all, but it doesn't take into account who the X might be. If X team trails by Y, then the win probability is Z. The X team is an amalgam of all the teams who have played from that deficit.
Right.
Or a probability rating. I'm not a math guy. What you need to do, though, is to take into account what should the probability rating be if it's Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, a four-time Super Bowl champion with the best coach in the history of the game who's incredibly situationally aware, who has Ernie Adams. And that's why when we look at win probability or talk about win probability, and people are going to lean on this for decades, here's how probable it was the Patriots were going to win. I'm going to sit there and say you can't, in sports, speak in a vacuum of statistics and numbers. And the reason the Patriots are a standout is, Phil, let's just maybe list a few games that you recall and I recall. Since 2011... that the Patriots have plucked either victory from the jaws of defeat, or they've at least had their hand on victory, were starting to pull it out, and then the jaws of defeat closed on them. And that was in games in which there were lopsided scores. First one for me.
What do you got?
The Wes Welker fumble game on the fumbled punt. Patriots trailed 24-0 at halftime of that game. Win probability was probably with Peyton Manning on the other side of the football. Real low. Real low. Windy night at Gillette Stadium.
Right.
The Patriots are still able to come back and win that game in overtime, a long, protracted overtime, on a field goal by Steven Gostkowski after a mishandle by Wes Welker. But that game does not stand out and live on an island, does it, Phil?
No, it doesn't. One that I remember covering, sitting right there next to you back in 2012, Patriots 49ers. They actually didn't win that game. But a ridiculous comeback. They were down 28 points and scored 28 unanswered to tie the thing. That was when Colin Kaepernick was in his heyday, had four touchdowns.
Randy Moss
that
had
day.
A touchdown that day.
Randy Moss. So just another instance.
The Red
great
Sox.
Game. One of the best games I've ever seen at Gillette, I think.
Improbable 2013 win when the Red Sox were going to win later that night. They had to have so many things go right. New Orleans had to mismanage some factors. And then there was a touchdown pass to Kenbrell Tompkins. I'm going to write a story on this, folks, so you're going to have also something to rely upon. The Cleveland game in 2000, and I believe that was 13 as well. The Patriots needed to recover an onside kick after scoring a touchdown. Then they needed to grab a pass interference call on Aaron Dobson, I believe, to set them up for a touchdown. But again, these factors, these things...
Needed an onside kick that day.
Yes, they recovered an onside kick. Even some games where you mentioned San Francisco that they had a comeback that didn't work, that happened with Philadelphia last year. They fall behind 35-14, scratching and clawing their way back. Even the AFC Championship game in 2015, I would include in these things. The point I'm trying to make is the Patriots are not a conventional team. Sometimes their comebacks may come up short, but at 28-3, my wife said, "This is terrible." I said, "It seems that way, but it will get close. I guarantee it." I didn't think they were going to win the game. I mean, so many things had to happen, but I did know it would become a one-score game.
And that's what's great about sitting next to you for these games, not to pat you on the back too hard, but it is, you've seen a lot, and I've seen a lot, and the people out there have seen a lot, and there were a lot of us who said, well, it's just a question of, you know, what the final score is going to be. But, and you didn't predict a win, but you looked at me in the third quarter at some point. It must have been that James White, after the first James White touchdown, I think, but just said, look, this is where they go on their run. Just,
yeah, it's going to be a run.
It's inevitable. It's like an NBA game. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the team's down 20 in the third quarter, but you know the finals, you know, the margin of victory is going to be 3 or 4. And so you had that sort of feel. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who felt similarly.
When we pick it up in 15 to 25 minutes, let's talk about immediately coming out of the chutes why I think the Falcons melted down and why the Patriots were complicit in helping them melt down. And it's with that backdrop, all those games that we've talked about where the Patriots were able to come back on teams, and it's the backdrop of having Scott Pioli and Thomas Dimitroff probably explain to the Atlanta coaching staff, and it's with Kyle Shanahan understanding in his years in the NFL that, look, if there is a way to do the trigonometry or the calculus or the algebra that you have enough time to construct a drive and score points and the Patriots are somehow within not even reasonable but possible striking distance, you have to maximize. That, I think, informed the Atlanta Falcons' play calling late, even when they got to the 22-yard line. That's why the more I reflect on it, the less I think that this was a choke by Atlanta and more a fault of we have to stay aggressive against this team because if we don't, they're going to track us down.
But there were instances where they didn't have to be aggressive and they could have put themselves well enough away from the Patriots where the Patriots probably just didn't have enough time to catch up. And the instance I'm looking at in particular, and we've looked at it ad nauseum since that game, but it was that sequence where after the Julio Jones touchdown, Matt Ryan takes a 12-yard sack, courtesy of Trey Flowers.
Julio Jones catch on the sideline, you mean?
Sorry, yes. What did I say?
You said touchdown.
Sorry. Julio Jones catch on the sideline. And
There's 4 minutes and 40 seconds left, and you have first down and 10 at the 22.
Correct.
You hand off, and you get zero for the Atlanta Falcons.
Or negative one.
Negative one. So now it's second and 11. What do you call as a play caller up 8 points?
Whatever it is that
28 to 20 right
there. Run clock.
Okay. You're going to run clock.
Or try to. Patriots had timeouts.
On second 11, you're going to run the ball. Knowing that Tom Brady's on the other side.
Make them use their timeouts. You're still up. You're within field goal range. You're about to go up 11 with what would have been, 3 minutes to go?
Yeah, but you're...
It's a two-possession game at that point. You have to... You're forcing them to probably have to execute an onside kick.
Don't you want to win the game on your terms, though, if you're Atlanta?
No, you want to win the game.
You want to own the ball.
You want to win the game.
Yeah, so that means don't give the ball back over. And on second 11 and 11, and I'm devil's advocating here.
Okay.
And trying to explain the logic. And this is why I think that this is not a conventional comeback. That's why the Patriots, you can't talk about probabilities 538 in Pro Football Reference. You have to look at the Patriots as being an outlier. And the Atlanta Falcons looking in their rearview mirror and seeing a silver helmet with a Flying Elvis logo on the side meant that they had to operate in a different way. 11 might not be enough.
I think it made them think that. I don't think they had to do that. I think that mentality works against you. I think you're chasing ghosts. If you think you have to go above and beyond just because of who it is, you've already, in some ways, lost.
Yep. And I think that that's okay. And I think that that's why you don't dismiss Kyle Shanahan doing it, but you say the same way with Pete Carroll, who mismanaged the end. I understand what he did. I understand why he threw the ball, and the reason Seattle threw the ball, to go back 2 years for no good goddamn reason, was because they pissed away a timeout after the two-minute warning and didn't have enough to stop the clock if they ran the ball after. So it was the Patriots in the rearview mirror that changed things. If it was Ben Roethlisberger, I know that he's got those in his satchel, that he's made great comebacks, but I don't think that the way Atlanta would have called the game at the end was the same. The presence of Ernie Adams and the ability of the Patriots to wring every second and situational decision on the fly out makes you nervous. I mean, we thought it was stupid when it took the Patriots 12 plays and 75 yards to score a touchdown. They explained that they wanted to maintain the presence of the run. Additionally, I don't know if they were doing this on purpose. They wanted to gain yards and score, but they were also wearing down the Atlanta defense even further. People said to me, why would you go ahead and kick a field goal at that point? I think we debated that sitting next to each other in the press box. Turned out to be the right idea. Get yourself, you're going to need a field goal eventually. Get yourself from 19 down to 16 down. We also had a conversation when Atlanta was in a position, where was it, Phil, where I said to you, is it a two-down situation for Atlanta here? They were backed up.
Was it on that? I don't know. I want to know is, how does, whether it's, you mentioned Ernie Adams or Belichick or whoever it is, Nick Casario up in the booth, how do they know when to speed it up, when to slow it down? How do they know how many possessions they might have? Because what was interesting about them going at the pace that they went and bled as much clock as they did was that if that game had played out as it was going without any Dante Hightower turnover, mm-hmm. they weren't going to have enough time. And we would be going back to that right. sequence and said to ourselves, they lost however many, even if it was just a minute or a minute and a half, we would have gone back to that and said, well, what if they could have got squeezed another possession out of this whole thing? So yeah. it's you know, you're playing probabilities. They do it. It would be interesting for me to find out what the inner workings are there, because they can look at a sheet of paper and say, well, 6 minutes left in the third. We got five more possessions.
I think
and then work their way back.
In observing them, what their thought process is, we need to score, we need to get into the end zone, and we need to do it quickly.
And then you go from there.
Quickly doesn't have it. First thing, what do we need to do? We need to get in the end zone. How soon? Well, quickly. So quickly that we don't get into the end zone, that we rush ourselves and end up with not a touchdown? No. So whatever it takes to get us into the end zone. But if it takes us a long time, well, it's going to increase the likelihood that we need to come up with a game-changing possession-altering play.
Right.
Fortunately for them, they got it. Had they not gotten it, that's a problem. I want to talk about, as well, the other factor, and the Atlanta factor in this, and the Patriots factor in this. In hindsight, strangely and oddly enough, the Atlanta Falcons may have been ill-served by Robert Alford's pick six.
I laugh because you mentioned that to me before we started potting, and it took a good 3 to 4 seconds for that statement to register in my brain, and I said, Wait, what? Explain to the people.
Because, again, you're never going to not benefit by scoring a touchdown.
Pick sixes are generally
good,
well received
for the defense.
Yes.
People are psyched. You can look at the sidelines and nobody's mad. But in hindsight, when you look at the number of plays the Patriots were able to run in the first half, I'm not saying they should have gone out and thrown a whole bunch of pick sixes so that they had the ball
to wear them out.
But because of the pick six, by halftime, the Patriots snap to the defensive ratio was Patriots were on the field for 17 defensive plays. The Falcons had been on 40 by halftime. had Alford picked the ball off and been tackled right where he was. Perhaps the Falcons get the ball. They go down and score. They were getting chunks of yards as it was. And the Patriots never have a chance to go the other way and even threaten for a touchdown and get the field goal. So perhaps it's 21-0. Instead, they score, obviously, very quickly in about 8 seconds. Patriots get the ball back. They're able to save face with a score. But the Falcons never get those defensive plays back that they had to face because Alford scored quickly. Again, for all you reductive assholes out there who are going to say, oh, apparently pick sixes are bad according to these dickwads on the quick slants of pocket, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying in hindsight, when you look at the numbers and the way it played out, Atlanta was gassed.
Gassed.
By the end of this football game.
Yep.
Which they are a speed team. They brought in adrenaline. They brought energy. They brought violence. They were a terrific defense. They'll be around again. But they paid the price conditioning-wise. And, Phil, we talked about conditioning how often during this season, going back to the off season.
Regular listeners will know that this is something that we hit on regularly. I don't know if it's every week, but it feels like every couple. I mean, we just did it last week, and you had moseyed off to God knows where on Radio Row when we were talking about the float tanks. But that's part of the same thing. The float tanks program for the Patriots is run by it's not just a relaxation thing. It's run by the team nutritionist. It's a health and wellness thing. It all goes
Ted
towards the same department, Ted Harper. So that is a part of it. What was funny to me was that after the game, without being prompted, a lot of these guys, I believe at least three, Martellus Bennett, Julian Edelman, Matthew Slater, referenced the hills that they run after practice and the fact that they had to run the hills even during that last week of practices at Gillette Stadium. Martellus Bennett joked it was week 23. Who runs the hills in week 23?
Do I know a guy who wrote a story about hills?
Huh. Yes, you do. Sitting
What's
right
it
here.
Called? It's called Sitting Mount right here. Belichick.
Well,
that was the Cleveland one.
That was the Cleveland one. That's all right. If you, Adam Hart was very nice. Adam's not here with us today producing this thing. But on the Expats podcast, which he also produces, he gave that story that I wrote during training camp a little bit of a bump. The headline on CSNNE.com is After Practice, Patriots Head to the Hills. And Belichick did this in Cleveland, had a big, nasty hill, called it Mount Belichick. They have something similar now at the back end of the practice fields that they make those
Which
guys
they've
run
taken so seriously.
All the
they've,
time.
They've gone from using it just as a hill, a whole crap load of gravel. They've now turfed it.
It's nice turf. It's well manicured. It has white painted lines as though it looks like a miniature little football field, like they play the Puppy Bowl on. But it has an incline, and guys use it not only for conditioning, but you see guys rehabbing on that thing a lot. Guys actually that are coming back from long absences will work on their speed, Belichick told me, by running down the hill, just to get your legs. It's almost like when you ramp the treadmill up at, 15 or whatever to just see how fast your legs can go. I know you do that all the time. So interesting that guys would reference that. And, one of the things when I did that story back in training camp, that guys told me was, look, Danny Amendola said this, it makes you comfortable with being uncomfortable. And not only does that help you, I think, in terms of your wind at the end of a game like the one we saw the other night, but it helps you condition your brain to perform and compete when stuff is hitting the fan.
And you know you've done it. And you know that you can look across at this incredible athlete who's lined up against you, who's had a great game so far, and say, I bet he doesn't have a coach who made him do these things. Mm-hmm. I bet he's not ready to be dipped into the cauldron of stuff that I've been in. I'll tell you this. You're sitting there and saying, well, don't all teams do this? Oh, God bless the Patriots. They've reinvented the entire method of conditioning.
Right. Oh, they make the guys run, huh? Do they also drink some water? Does that help?
I watched the Washington Redskins in Norfolk, Virginia break when the Patriots practiced with them with Jay Gruden. And they would go scattered into little groups with their helmets off and their shoulder pads in their hands and walk into practice. The Patriots were still out there running sprints as a team back and forth across the field in 90-plus degree heat after those practices. By the end of the week, there were small groups of Washington Redskin players also doing the same thing. Every team doesn't do this. They are at the point of a bayonet, forced to do this by their head coach. And the people that they hire as players are okay with that crap because they understand what they're going to be asked to do. And if you're not, best idea is to go sign someplace else. And some guys do that. Also, we talked about all season long the Patriots' commitment to conditioning in terms of managing their practice time. We saw it during the latter part of Super Bowl week and actually the postseason when the Patriots realized they were going to be playing 6 o'clock games. They moved their entire schedule back to the evening so that they were practicing in the afternoon, meeting in the late afternoon, and usually not leaving the facility until 7 or 8 o'clock. Same thing happened down at the Super Bowl where our access was 5 to 6 o'clock Eastern time. All those little things, which are commonsensical, which are out of the box, however, based upon what other teams do, contribute. So those are just a couple of observations.
And when you play a game where one team has 99 snaps offensively and the other has about 50, that's where that stuff can really be amplified, the whatever advantage it is that you have. And I think we saw that. The Falcons defense that was flying around at such an impressive rate of speed early in that game was not late in that game, and Brady had time to throw, and the offensive line all of a sudden looked a lot better. And that, in my opinion, it's a simple thing, but conditioning was a huge, huge factor.
And the style of the routes that the Patriots started to hit on was far different. Sideline comeback routes, which are requiring those very good and fast Atlanta corners to sprint, turn their hips, then put their foot in the ground and sprint back upfield as Brady throws a timing throw. You might be able to do that a lot. Can you do it 90 times? Can you do it 40 times if they run 40 of those patterns after you've already sprinted however many times? People aren't built to do that. That's why it came open. That's why James White was able to create after the catch in a way that he wasn't able to do earlier in the game. So,
can I just interject something real quick?
Yeah, I want to switch in a second to big plays.
On those comeback routes, just in general, Malcolm Mitchell hit on a couple of those. Brady hit on a couple of those to him. I don't know if you noticed this, but there was one play where he fell down.
Yeah.
I rewatched that game. I thought at first when we were just he might have lost his footing when he was getting out of his break.
A lot of guys seemed to over at the edges, but yeah.
They did, but I think in that instance, it looked almost like his leg gave out on him. He's been dealing with a knee injury for some time, and I don't know if it was just a strength thing or if there is something loose in there that just came unhinged or what. He stayed in the game, but it looked like a pretty awkward fall, and for him to get up and make that catch and have the game that he did, 6 catches for 70 yards, a lot of them in critical spots. That catch in particular came right before the Edelman catch. Just a really impressive game from a very impressive kid who's had a great year. And got a chance to talk to him after the game, walking from the locker room to the team bus. He's mowing on a plate of to-go chicken wings that he got from somewhere. And talked to me about how he was nervous, and so nervous that in practices 2 weeks before the game, back at Gillette, after the AFC Championship game, he was dropping passes and having just crap practice after crap practice. And Brady pulled him aside and talked to him and said, "Malcolm, you're good. Just relax. Just take it a play at a time." And just conveyed a certain level of trust and belief in him. And it was nothing exotic. They didn't sit in a room and talk for an hour about how everything's going to be okay and you're going to perform when I call upon you. But it was enough to put Mitchell at ease. Had better practices when they got to Houston. Obviously played well in the game. So he was, and this kind of is a credit to his character as well, asking him about the great game he had in his first ever Super Bowl. He looks to the quarterback, and not just because of the passes that he threw to him, but because of the gesture he showed him a couple weeks earlier.
When rewatching the game, Phil, I'm going to go first and give you a chance to think about it. Not even big plays, but interesting plays, ones that you might have missed the first time through. There was an interesting play, was inconsequential, but it was one that gained much commentary. Julian Edelman breaking across the field and Tom Brady overthrowing him or missing him. And everyone, myself included, on first watch said, "Wow, he never misses someone by that much." If you watch that play a second time, you'll see that as Brady is releasing the ball just prior to it, Edelman is subtly bumped by someone crossing the other way, a Falcons defender. Not pass interference by any stretch. It just altered his speed so that the timing of the route was messed. And it's tremendous to watch these games later, and you get explanations. There's that. There was the Martellus Bennett screen before the half, which wasn't going to work anyway, but looked even worse because it appears as if he got hung up inside and didn't release out into the flat to catch the ball. Situational awareness, by the way, also. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. He's been in bad offenses, or probably not situationally aware offenses long enough. Martellus, get out of bounds. Get out of bounds.
Man, it just felt like he was waiting for something to open up on that play for
out
3 hours and but it didn't move.
Anything that you watched or witnessed and when you played it back, whether it be to the good or to the bad?
Well, I would say just to the interesting or to the ironic, and I mentioned this when we did our, today's parade day, we're taping this on parade day. We did a little pre-parade show here in our studios and mentioned this to you and Giardi. Interesting for me to see the last play of the game and the Patriots run a crack toss to the right with James White, with Julian Edelman blocking down, Chris Hogan blocking down. Edelman laid a serious block on defensive back. I forget who it was. I think it was Poole. And Marcus Cannon, the play side tackle, getting out into space and taking out a defensive back. That's the exact same play or the exact same concept that was killing the Patriots earlier in the game with Devontae Freeman, those crack tosses. Devin McCourty told you and Giardi about it right after the game on the field. He said that's been a tough play for us all year. I'm interested to know why that was such a difficult play for them, because it sounds like they knew week after week that teams were going to try it. My inkling is it's really tough if you have linebackers at the second level who are a little bit unaware.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have Kyle Van Noy and Shea McClellan and Landon Roberts at the second level, and those guys don't see it right away, they don't see those receivers blocked down, it can be hard to pursue and make the play.
Or whoever the edge player is.
And sometimes it's not even on the edge guy.
Like you pointed
is
out
sometimes
during the
just
game.
In trouble.
You pointed out during the game on the Freeman touchdown run to the left.
Their first score, right.
Atlanta did a terrific job with motion just before the snap. There's a lot going on. And then right before the snap, Phil noticed that Devin McCourty was putting pushing out Eric Rowe to watch the edge. And Rowe got it, understood what he was being told. But at the snap, he still couldn't help himself. And he came back inside behind the right defensive end. And it's almost like getting caught. Getting caught in a riptide.
It was impossible for him to even get close because Freeman just bounced it outside, simple cut.
And now there was junk in between Rowe and the area to get back outside.
Right, and so it was his instinct to be aggressive in that situation. But McCourty was trying to get him out, be that boundary guy. And I'm not saying that the entire play is on Rowe. Trey Flowers probably could have done a better job of setting an edge there, but it's just one little instance.
That's
where
the difference in these touchdowns in these games.
It really is. It's a few. It's like the equivalent of a few shuffles to his right that probably would have helped Rowe a ton in that
and
play.
And it's the difference between upside and downside. What's the upside of Eric Rowe staying inside the defensive end to help in run support? Not that high.
Right.
There's six other guys in there already. What's the downside to it? Well, if you get stuck up in there and they run to the boundary, you're not there anymore. So you have to do that whole equation, which is easy for me to say as pushing 50 and haven't played the game. My adrenaline's not as high as his. I'm not that hungry to make a play. I can see what's going on. He wants to make a play. And that's when these guys say things like that. I want to make a play. That's almost counterintuitive to what the Patriots are about. No, you want to play the defense, and then within the defense, go ahead and make a play.
Right.
Everybody doesn't have Ed Reed, Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel instincts that, I just saw this, and so I went. So, anything else?
Just in terms of, another high-profile play, but just a little bit different angle in terms of how we look at it. Jake Matthews has been a little bit of a goat in the bad way.
Mm-hmm. Ottabi.
For holding Chris Long. And Ottabi.
He had two holds as well.
He did.
He had a hold after the onside kick.
Bad game. The one at the end was killer. But I think you do have to give Long a little bit of credit just for the guy very rarely got home this year. And I talked to him a couple times about that this year in terms of recording sacks. But he did get what was essentially a game winner in New York at the end of the year. But consistently one of the best on the team in terms of just generating pressure. And they use him situationally. He was essentially a third down rusher. They tried him in some other spots, starting in training camp and then early into the season. They had him in coverage every so often. They got away from that. He became a pure pass rusher, essentially, towards the end of the year. And again, didn't get home a whole lot, but him creating enough pressure and putting enough into Matthews' mind in that instance where Matthews felt he had to hold probably to keep him from getting to Matt Ryan for back-to-back sacks on that play and just hope he got away with it. He came through with a big play in a big spot. So give him a little bit of credit. A guy's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Would be fascinated to know what kind of offers he would see mm-hmm. on the market. What I do know is Rob Ninkovich would be despondent if Chris Long were to ever go, because those guys are best friends now.
They're the two best friends that anyone
could have.
Could have.
Yeah.
Let's get off the plays.
Yeah. Do you have any others?
I really don't.
Okay.
I don't. What I do want to get into, because we're both guests, Phil, as you mentioned, Ryan Perry is on the planet now. He's officially on the planet. We need to get Phil home.
It's an
for
interesting
that.
Way of putting it. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but you're not wrong.
Nose guy has to get home. You know, it's been shitty out there in the weather department.
Yeah. Drive safe out there,
everybody. We're not going to give people like, oh, my life's so hard. I was in the Super Bowl on my company's dime for a week, and then I went to the game, and I'm wicked tired, and I came home and worked, and then I had to do television. I'm not going to do that. However.
You kind of just did it.
Going to do it anyway. We went to the game, had a blast, covered the crap out of it. Then we finished the game and went straight to the airport because we had to get home for quick slants. Then you kind of hang out. You go home, and you're home at 9. And then they're like, hey, we got that parade. We want to get in here for the parade. So really only been home for a few hours of sleep since Sunday morning the previous week. So I'm gonna get home. I got shit all over the living room.
Oh, God.
Because I opened it up, gave my wife the souvenirs.
You know what you do?
That I picked up for her class.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you did. You did some good work on that end.
I stole some backpacks, which I kind of feel badly about.
Those are not stolen. You were very open about that.
At the CSN Christmas
party? Yeah, we had a nice little... It was not a Christmas party. Christmas was months ago now.
Yeah.
A month ago. Yeah. No, that was right in front of everybody's nose. Yeah, that was okay.
It was nose guy.
Everybody got free backpacks. It was a lovely affair.
And once people had a little too much wine, nose guy started walking around. You guys, you want this? My wife...
You want this backpack? You want this backpack?
I kind of need this.
You need your backpack?
Some people were starting to protest.
Nice backpacks, too.
And I put a hand up and said, you're going to keep this away from third grader, you asshole? Just put it right in there and get out.
CSN logos on those. Think they're going to be some very happy children. And
I got them some confetti from the field.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah. Probably more valued than the backpack.
You're
probably
right.
Backpack.
That will go like in some little kid's drawer somewhere.
You don't even know what that song Backpack, Backpack is.
No, never heard of that. Is that a song?
Backpack, Backpack. Backpack, backpack.
Sounds like something you just made up right now.
No, it's from...
To be honest with you.
What's that? Swiper, no swiping? It's not Blue's Clues. Somebody will help us.
Let's just call this phase, Somebody Will Help Us, brought to you by Papagino's. Tom, did you know that every Papagino's pizza starts with dough made fresh daily in Walpole, Mass? Did you also know that it's made from five simple ingredients? Have you thought of it yet?
Dora the Explorer.
Dora the Explorer, there you go. Did you know that Dora the Explorer actually did an entire episode on her love for Papagino's pizza?
Yep.
But they actually cut it loose for some reason. Because
Swiper tried to swipe it, and she said, Swiper, no swiping my Papagino's pizza.
And they just felt that was offensive, because Dora the Explorer is a positive show. They're trying to reinforce positive things. Dora didn't want to share her pizza, and I don't blame her because it's delicious. I do the same thing when Tom tries to come in and swipe mine. I say, Tom, there's a whole pie right outside the room. You just have to go up and get it, bring it back, and stuff
and
it
I
in your
say
face.
What Swiper would say from the show. Aw, man. I don't even know if Dora's still on anymore, but Phil, this is what awaits you in the next few years. These are the shows that I used to have to watch. Dora, Blue's Clues, Teletubbies.
I'm ready. I think I'm ready. Tom, while we're on the topic of Dora the Explorer, I feel like it's time to at least acknowledge the review that we got this week from C Thor 3. I might be reading that incorrectly. C Thor 3, it looks like. Five-star review.
Five?
Yeah. Yeah, it's five stars. It's a great review. It's actually pretty long. I'm going to try to edit this for length. But he says, happy I found this show. Five stars. I'm originally from Mass, but currently stationed in Georgia for the Navy. Oh, thank you for your service. And this show cured me of all my homesick needs. Papagino's Pizza and Patriots Football. This sounds like our kind of guy. Like, he should be on this show.
I know.
I am glad I found the audio version of what used to be my favorite sports show, Quick Slants. Very entertaining.
Oh, nice.
Tom and the Senator bring information and facts in new, creative, and intelligent ways. I love the inside looks on the players' personalities, whether it's, hey, what's your number? or News Go. This show will keep you entertained start to finish, and with dough made fresh daily in Walpole. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. Great show. Glad I found it. Give it a listen because it's worth it. Exclamation point. C Thor 3 or CT43.
Because he sounds like that. We need you, man.
That was maybe the best review we've ever had.
That sounds like a fake Yelp review.
No, that was like really well written. I think he hit on all the right points.
CT43. I found a CT43.
That might be him. This says CTHOR3.
He's following 11. He has three followers. And
is one of them you?
No.
Sounds like he's a big fan.
He follows. Yeah.
Sounds like he sounds like a long time Quick Slants fan.
He follows Diddy. He follows Dig. He follows Om Malik.
This could be a different guy.
He follows Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz and Quick Slants go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Chris at CT for three on Twitter. Good to have you. It did sound like a plant. I mean, you're the best. That's the best and most. He's got the, hey, what's the mumble?
He almost started to give Papagino's a plug and had to stop himself because I don't think they're paying him. But they might start if you keep pumping in reviews like that.
Well, maybe the social media people will get with the program out there. I'm going to talk to them. I'm serious.
Here we go. We get CT for three, CT whore three, C Thor or C Thor three, whatever it is. Please clear that up for us, CT or C Thor. And maybe they hire him to run their social media.
Should we have the 42-minute club golf tournament or draft party?
I saw Sean Driscoll bring that up. Sean Driscoll got at both of us. I forgot golf was even involved. Did you broach golf?
Maybe we should just go to
the 42-minute club. That seems like,
let's just go to Splitsville at Patriot Place.
Yeah, I'm picturing the whole 42-minute club. The 42-minute club, people out there would be surprised. I think as much. Maybe we're the only ones who are surprised. It's much larger than you ever would have thought.
Well, it's funny. Well, now we had 90,000 downloads last week.
We had even more than that, I believe. We broke the 90,000 threshold. Thank you to everybody out there who listened to us last week, Super Bowl podcast.
Yeah, and if you're a new listener, thanks to Stitcher ever. And you came back, you're awesome.
Love you.
Sorry, Adam.
Love
you, mean it. Swear to get out.
Love
we
you,
did
mean
get
it.
The green light to be able to say shit. I think, asshole, we'll find out whether or not Dickwad is officially in or not, but I still think that we're...
we're learning as we go here.
Not clear whether or not we can say...
I'm pretty sure that one's out, but we'll see. We'll see. It's a podcast. It's like the Wild West of the internet.
Was this the greatest Super Bowl ever, Phil?
Boy. You know what?
Vanilla chocolate conversation?
No, I like this conversation. That's the kind of sports conversation you can have. I would say this.
I got to poop.
The fourth quarter, maybe probably the best quarter.
But that's the thing. Ever. Is that the 2008 Super Bowl was an absolute shootout between the Cardinals and the Steelers. Excuse me, 2008. Was that 2010?
No, I think that was...
No, it was 2008 in Tampa.
Yeah, 2010 Packers won it, I believe.
Yes, you're right. So it was, Packers beat the Steelers. 2008, that fourth quarter was insane. You had a Larry Fitzgerald touchdown reception over the middle, followed by obviously the Santonio Holmes touchdown. And the fourth quarter of Patriots-Panthers was epic.
And that game gets a lot of credit for being start to finish the best game. Like the hitting in that game, the both sides. It feels like that game was well executed throughout. You would know better than me.
Yeah.
this one was like going back into the Wayback Machine watching the Cowboys and the Bills from the early 90s for three quarters.
This game was the best. This was the greatest story ever told.
I think you're right. The highs and the lows in this one?
The highs and the lows. What was at stake? The drama of it. If you wanted to come up with a cuckoo script, this fit it.
Yes.
If you wanted to talk about the greatest underdog stories ever told in the NFL, there's three. There's the 69 Jets. There, 68 Jets, I believe it was. 68 season. It might be wrong. Super Bowl III Jets. There's the 2001 Patriots. And there's the 2007 Giants. Those are your three options. Take any of those Super Bowls. For drama, you probably would have to say either 07 or 01. Which game was better, I don't know. You can discuss. Which was a greater upset, 01 Patriots, which was a more historic game. You can debate that.
Was 01 Patriots a greater upset than Giants beating the undefeated Patriots?
I think so. Jesus, I don't know, man. I mean,
I wonder what the spread. It'd be interesting to look at the spreads from those games.
14 was the spread for the Patriots to overcome.
Okay.
And I'm not positive what the Giants was. It should have been about 10 for the Giants, but that was a 9-7 Giants team. Against a 16-0 Patriots.
Yeah, but
team.
Gave them a hell of a time at the end of the regular season that year.
Patriots gave the Rams a lot to deal with, too. Be that as it may, I look at this one. I don't know if this was better than the 14 game. The 14 game was like, you know, the crying game. Just a great reveal at the end.
You're right.
It was like Sixth Sense.
Another game where it was just how many. Belichick always uses the term championship play. Like, how many championship plays happened in that game in 14? I mean, you don't have to trace it all that far back from
both
Malcolm
teams.
Butler's pick. Both teams.
Both teams.
Unbelievable catches. Dante Hightower stop Marshawn Lynch. How about Hightower? I mean, we can wait on the free agency talk. We'll get into that as the offseason goes along. But how about that guy
making two of the maybe
three most important plays in two different Super Bowl games. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's going
to
have to be
outside of Malcolm Butler.
If I do my
nobody's
Patriots
made bigger
top
plays
50 of the Belichick era, I might have to put him top, certainly top 30 now. He'll go from 46-ish where he was.
Oh, yeah.
He'd have to be top. Wow, am I going to have to do that freaking list again?
I mean, that'd actually be interesting. Maybe throw some edits. Just throw a couple edits on that thing. Don't the whole thing over again.
Christian Fourier might be out.
You're out. Sorry, Christian. He'll get over it.
Just don't tell him.
He'll be okay.
Also, I want to revisit just for a second, too, because like I said, I muttered it, but I really do have to poop. What?
No, go. Please.
The hero's journey. We talked about it in September
and
October, and Tom Brady following the Joseph Campbell. Really, it's not Joseph Campbell's. He's the one who eyeballed it and taught on it. It's the story that has been followed since the Iliad and the Odyssey and probably even before, really even Jesus onto Luke Skywalker. It's what a person goes through, and it's the basis of all great storytelling, regardless if we're talking Jesus, Luke Skywalker, Iliad, Odyssey, or a Dr. Seuss story. It's someone who has a call to action that they at first resist and then they succumb to, and along the way what they face, the triumphs, the mentors. You can revisit it, but what Tom Brady completed, the final steps of the hero's journey, and I'll encourage you and send you to our website, csnne.com. Just Google current hero's journey and you'll find that mess. He completed it, and the way he completed it was you have to not only return, slay whatever dragon it is that's in front of you, but the final step is returning home a changed and humbled man. Mm. And I don't want to be sappy and syrupy with a family situation with Mrs. Brady, because regardless of football, that's real. It's actual.
Right.
But I do know that the reward for the family in experiencing that game on Sunday was special. Had they lost, Would that have changed things? No, Mrs. Brady would still not feel very good, and she would still have a road ahead of her, and Tom would not have failed her, nor would the Patriots have failed her. But it was nice that they got to live that together because, you know, I'm not into the whimsy of, oh, they won it for X, Y, or Z. They won the game, and it's nice that the person experiences it. Am I making sense over here?
No, help makes me out. A lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Brady, I think, was a little reluctant to get into that after the game. He did acknowledge it was nice for everybody to be there. But talking to some of his teammates, and Edelman included, and maybe, you know, first and foremost, Julian Edelman, one of his closest buddies on the team, you see them get emotional when they think about everything that Brady's been through. They think about his journey and especially what his family's going through right now and what all of this means for him. I mean, we've never seen Brady, I don't think, show that kind of emotion after a Super Bowl win.
It's always been joyous emotion.
Ever. Yeah.
It's joyous emotion. This was cathartic.
Yes. Like the deepest of deep breaths and like you could see the weight. I almost said come off his shoulders, but it's almost the opposite. He collapsed at the end of the game. It was like he has been under so much for so long that his body,
gave
out on him.
It's I can rest. I hit the finish line. If they had the tinfoil wraps you could put around him,
right?
Like you get yes. in Boston, it would have felt like that.
And I think there was a little bit of a. It was an awkward ending in some ways because of the way White broke the plane, and there was some question to it. One of our photographers, Bill Messina, was one of the first on the field. He was right in the back end line of that end zone. And out on the field after White crosses and people are celebrating, he said he basically could see a look of confusion on Brady's face, like, did he get in? Do we still have to? It was almost like he couldn't let go. There was what about the review? You know, is it over? Is it, you know? And with everything happening around him, was just a whirlwind.
And he's that, I hate to say it again, don't want to overstate it, that situationally aware.
Right.
That he's still computing.
Right. And just the power of that moment, too, probably. Might have made it hard
for
him to think about everything, right, and process it. So go back for sure. Go back and listen. We did a podcast on it. Tom wrote about it, Hero's Journey. And I think you'll enjoy it as you enjoy reading all about this team over the course of the next however many weeks before we really start to look towards 2017. This is a fun time for fans. You really get to just soak
luxurious.
Everything in and read everything and barely do a lick of work you're sitting at your computer.
And, you know, as people who have now, we get the chance to put this out there for you, and we know that you're out there listening and reading and feeding us back on the Twitter and with reviews like CT for three. We couldn't
I hope
be
that's
more
his
appreciative.
Name. We might be
that's all right.
reading that wrong.
C Thor 3?
Yeah.
We couldn't be more appreciative to know that as people who love football, we always resist saying fans, but as sports fans who are fortunate enough to cover a particular team in this area, everybody who follows sports wants to have their voice heard conversationally. These are the things that I think, and Phil and I are really, really lucky to be able to sit here and talk to you guys and tell you what we think. So we thank you for listening all the way through 2016 and into 17.
Well said.
Yeah, we're lucky. Later, bitches.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from CSNNE.com. If you liked it, if you hated it, let us know by leaving a rating or review. We could even read it during an upcoming episode. Subscribe to CSNNE Podcast. Like The Expats Podcast with Mike Giardi, Dan Copen, and Gerard Mayo. Quickslants the Podcast with Tommy Curran and Phil Perry. Or Celtics Talk with Kyle Draper and A. Sherrod Blakely by using podcasting services like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Audioboom.